We can look at this as a new day, and hopefully people will begin to do that as well.
A new push to protect ANWR from development. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 14th of January. Good evening, I'm Duncan Moon. Also tonight, the state challenges the Endangered Species Act listing for the Cook Inlet beluga.
It's unfortunate to see the state wasting money on a frivolous lawsuit when the science is sound.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If heating your home costs more than you can manage and you have a low income, the state of Alaska has heating assistance programs that may help. The programs have expanded to include families with a higher household income. For information or an application form, call 1-800-470-3058 or visit heatinghelp.alaska.gov. Sometimes a little help makes all the difference. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
An FBI whistleblower who criticized a fellow agent working on the Alaska corruption investigation has been identified. The name of Anchorage-based agent Chad Joy was revealed today in federal court in Washington, D.C. His identity came out during a hearing in the case of former Senator Ted Stevens. Last month, Justice Department prosecutors told the court that an FBI agent had filed a complaint about activities that went on during the recent Stevens trial. Stevens was convicted in October of lying on financial forms about gifts. Judge Emmett Sullivan, who presided at the Stevens trial, ordered a heavily redacted version of the agent's complaints to be placed on the public record. But today, Sullivan decided to make far more of them public. The 10-page complaint was written by Agent Joy after the Stevens trial and submitted to the Justice Department. In it, he accuses fellow agent Mary Beth Koeppner of questionable behavior. He claims Koeppner was too close to sources, including former VICO executives Bill Allen and Rick Smith. Both men are at the center of an ongoing corruption investigation into Alaska politics and have pleaded guilty to bribing state legislators. Joy says Koeppner went golfing with Smith, spent time alone with Allen, and gave Allen information about other informants that she shouldn't have. He also alleges that sources also gave Koeppner's husband a job and gave her a drawing of her dog as a gift. He accuses Koeppner of allowing her husband to use a, quote, covert FBI phone for personal use, and that she had inappropriate communication with members of the media. And Joy says Koeppner withheld information from the defense team during the Stevens trial. The Justice Department's Office of Public Integrity is looking into the matter. In the meantime, it could make a difference in the trial of Ted Stevens. Agent Joy had not been granted whistleblower status, which would protect his identity. When Judge Sullivan found that out, he agreed that more of Joy's complaint and his name could be revealed to the public. Sullivan was surprised to hear that Joy didn't have whistleblower status, since the judge was going to great lengths to protect his identity. In a ruling today, Sullivan demanded that the Justice Department explain who exactly knew about the complaint filed by Joy and when they found out he did not have whistleblower status. He wants the U.S. Attorney General to sign a declaration explaining what happened. A renewed effort to protect the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge from development is being met with excitement from environmental groups who hope they will find more allies in the Democratic-controlled Congress and the incoming Obama administration. Today, Senator Joe Lieberman, a Democratic-leading independent from Connecticut, introduced a bill that would protect the Arctic Refuge coastal plain from oil and gas exploration. Lieberman has repeatedly introduced the same bill in recent years, but today environmental groups say they have new hope. The Gwich'in Steering Committee, which advocates to preserve the refuge on behalf of Gwich'in Athabascans, is supporting Lieberman's bill. Executive Director Lucy Beach says there's new energy.
It's very hopeful. I mean, for several years, we've had a huge uphill battle of just being on the defense of protecting the calving and nursery grounds of the porcupine caribou herd. And now we're more so on the offense, and we can look at this as a new day, and hopefully people will begin to do that as well.
Lieberman's bill has 23 co-sponsors, but Alaska's new Democrat, Senator Mark Begich, has come out fighting against it, as he pledged to do when he ran for office. Begich says he hopes to convince his colleagues to open ANWR as part of a comprehensive energy plan.
I'm going to, as I said, do whatever I can to prevent legislation that attempts to put it aside or lock it up. But at the same time, I'm going to put my energy also into a long-term energy plan that talks about renewable energy, non-renewable energy like the gas line, MPRA, ANWR, offshore, as well as conservation and new technologies.
The Gwich'in Steering Committee's Lucy Beach says she agrees a comprehensive energy plan is in order, but she wants to see it focus on renewable energy. Beach says she's remembering the words of a Gwich'in elder who fought to protect the refuge.
Jonathan Solomon used to say, look at all the billions that have gone through Alaska, and where's the sustainable development? We're putting all our eggs into the oil industry basket, so to speak. And, you know, this is not a renewable resource we're talking about. So, again, especially the people in the rural areas, we need a new idea.
A companion bill to protect the Arctic Refuge was introduced in the House last week. At the same time, Congressman Don Young introduced a bill calling for opening ANWR to development. There is a deal to restart the experimental coal-fired power plant in Healy. The agreement was announced today following a flurry of activity by the boards of the two of the state's power utilities and the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. APRN's Steve Heimel reports.
It was supposed to demonstrate how to burn coal more cleanly for the rest of the country, but it never got past the testing stage. The Healy Clean Coal Plant cost at least $300 million. But the Fairbanks Power Utility balked at actually taking possession of the plant from the state, as Revenue Commissioner Pat Galvin, who chairs the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, explained at a news conference.
The history of the Healy Clean Coal Plant is one of great promise and great frustration.
The frustration put the whole situation in court and involved other utilities in bidding for the plant after it was shut down in 2000, with Ada holding the bag. The Golden Valley Electric Association said it simply would not work at its advertised efficiency, and the utility only wanted to take it if it could run it without all the clean coal technology, like the coal-fired power plant they already have there. But the economy of power generation is different now. GVEA Chairman Bill Nordmark says the cost of other fuels now dwarfs the difference between conventional and clean coal technology.
At that time, we were paying $11 for oil. We were generating electricity out of our present coal plant, which is conventional, for 3.2 cents a kilowatt. With the clean coal technology, I don't remember the exact number, but I think we were up in around 8 cents. Well, the difference between 3 cents and 8 cents was astronomical to us in those days. Well, things have changed.
The agreement also involves the Homer Electric Association, which was ready to take the plant off Ada's hands after Golden Valley balked. Under this deal, Homer Electric gets half the power from the plant, starting in 2014, and Nordmark says the utility will also share the risk of the new technology.
There's a big risk in starting this plant. It's never really been run commercially. There's a lot of risk in running coal plants, and while we still have that risk, it'll be shared with Homer and makes it much more palatable to both of our parties.
The lawsuit will stay in place until the deal is completely worked out. That pending litigation was cited as the reason that all three boards took the agreement up in executive sessions yesterday, according to Homer Electric Chairwoman Deb Debenham.
The reason it was in executive session was because there are legal documents that are in place that we're all bound by, and other items that cannot be discussed in open session.
The executives pointed out that the actual votes did take place in open session after the executive sessions were ended. Golden Valley gets the coal plant for $50 million, which it is borrowing from Ada. It also gets a $45 million line of credit to use in starting it up. Galvin said they hope to be generating power within 6 to 18 months. The plant would add 50 megawatts to the rail belt's generation capacity. In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
still to come on Alaska News Nightly. Remembering Homa's world-famous eagle lady.
The fish that she doled out grew and as did the number of eagles.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The University of Alaska Fairbanks now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Fisheries students work directly with professionals in their field and enjoy hands-on learning through internships and research. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
Providing statewide news coverage since 1978, we are the Alaska Public Radio Network, APRN, your source for Alaska's news.
The U.S. House of Representatives has voted to reauthorize and significantly expand a federal program that provides medical insurance to lower-income children. The House passed the State Children's Health Insurance Program, or SCHIP, by a vote of 289 to 139. The vote was mostly along party lines, with Democrats supporting it, but about 40 Republicans crossed over to vote for it as well. Alaska Congressman Don Young was among the Republicans who voted in favor of the SCHIP health program.
I just think that this is the right thing to do. I voted for the original CHIP bill, last year, and I'm very, very cognizant of the need to keep young people healthy so that they're healthier as they get older.
The expansion will help give health insurance to an additional 4 million children who live at or near the poverty line and fall outside the Medicaid system. The plan will mostly be paid for through a hefty increase in the federal cigarette tax. The Senate is expected to move on a bill this month. The federal action on the SCHIP program is giving major support to a move to increase access to Denali Kid Care, Alaska's child health care program that receives the federal support. The changes in federal law more than doubles the federal contribution to the state's program. Currently, Denali Kid Care allows health care services for children of families whose income is as much as 175% of the federal poverty level. Bills pre-filed this year would increase that income cap to 200% of the poverty level. Last month, Governor Palin said she supports the increase. She says it will help working families.
This isn't done lightly, a decision like this, and we know that there probably will be some healthy debate stemming from some opposition in the legislature over this, because, you know, we've all heard stories of some abuses of the system there. So, again, we're taking serious our mission to end those abuses and fund a needed, trustworthy program that legitimately and appropriately serves some vulnerable children, children who don't have a choice regarding some of their circumstances at home.
Senate Democrat Bill Willikowski has promoted health care reform for several years. He says the federal action and the government support help considerably. He says if the current state levels of eligibility don't increase, Alaska will not be able to use all the federal money it could get.
When we're getting 70% paid back by the federal government, that's a good investment. And when you also look at the fact that all the studies out there show that when you treat kids early, they're less likely to get serious illnesses later on. And if we've got kids now that can't afford health care and we're not giving them health care, we're not providing health care for them, and we just kind of let the illnesses linger on, they're going to get worse. And at some point down the road, we're going to have much, much bigger expenses from Medicaid and from welfare and from other public assistance. So it really is a tremendous, tremendous investment to take care of our kids.
Willikowski says the increase in Alaska's program would not put it out of line with similar programs in other states. Some cover children from families earning more than three times the poverty level. He says that with the federal grants more than doubling, Alaska should aim higher, and he will work to increase the eligibility even more. The state of Alaska has given notice that it will sue the federal government over the Endangered Species Act listing for the Cook Inlet beluga. The whale was listed as endangered last fall after biologists determined the population was at high risk of extinction. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
The state objected to the listing decision for the Cook Inlet beluga when it was announced last October. Doug Vincent Lang is Alaska's endangered species coordinator. He says calling the beluga endangered is premature.
We feel that this population is beginning to show signs of recovery from past overharvest. And overharvest was, almost everybody agrees, was the primary threat facing this population.
The Cook Inlet beluga population declined nearly 50% between 1994 and 1998. The native subsistence hunt was severely restricted the next year. Still, the population numbers hit a low of less than 300 animals in 2005. In the last few years, the count has been stable at 375 whales. Doug Meekum is acting administrator for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in Alaska. He says the state is interpreting the numbers very differently than the agency.
This is a very small population. It's an isolated population. It has not recovered as we had expected. And that population faces many threats, so we thought it was important to list them to make sure we're adequately protecting them.
Meekum says the best models show a high likelihood of extinction for the whales in the next century. And he says a lot of careful science and public input went into making the decision.
You know, this wasn't something that we took lightly, and it underwent a lot of scrutiny. And in fact, we communicated with the state quite extensively on this before we made the decision. Obviously, they disagree.
The endangered species listing could affect a range of development in Cook Inlet, including the Port of Anchorage expansion, the proposed Knickarm Bridge, and oil and gas exploration. Doug Vincent Lang with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game says the federal government doesn't have enough evidence to call the Cook Inlet belugas a distinct species. He also says NOAA failed to take into account all the state is doing to help protect the belugas.
The state has a vast array of regulatory programs in place, from its coastal zone management program to local zoning, to water quality regulations, to protected areas in the inlet that really minimize the threats from other, the impacts of other threats on those whale populations while they're starting to recover and the harvest management plan is in place.
At least five environmental groups are denouncing the state's intention to sue over the listing. Bob Shavelson with Cook Inlet Keeper says it's about politics.
It's unfortunate to see the state wasting money on a frivolous lawsuit when the science is sound and it's gone through a rigorous review. The National Marine Fisheries Service has looked at this very carefully, and they came out with a conclusion that supports what the U.S. Marine Mammal Commission has recommended, what the World Conservation Union has recommended, and what every objective independent scientist who's looked at this has recommended.
The state says even though it's moving forward with a potential lawsuit, it won't give up its efforts to protect the species. Alaska also filed a lawsuit in August to overturn the federal government's decision to list the polar bear as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Much of the state has seen a dramatic shift in temperature, with the mercury rising rapidly in the last couple of days. And nowhere has it been more dramatic than in interior Alaska. National Weather Service meteorologist Don Eichach in Fairbanks says the minus 50 readings have given way to temperatures well above freezing at some locations today.
We could be seeing some 40-degree readings at higher elevations this afternoon. So if you compare that to what we had last week, between the lowest last week and the highest today, we'd be looking at a 90-something degree difference.
Eichach says warm air is being funneled north from the Pacific Ocean by juxtaposed low and high pressure systems. He says the above normal temperatures are forecast to give way to more normal readings in the interior by this weekend. He says temperatures should be back below zero again by Monday, but nowhere near the lows experienced during the recent cold snap, which saw 14 days bottom out at minus 40 or colder in Fairbanks.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Giving Coalition announces Pick, Click, Give, a whole new way to reach out and help Alaskans when you apply for your PFD online. Share part of your dividend with some of your favorite Alaska nonprofits. It's a chance for all of us to come together and give a little extra. Remember, when you apply for your PFD online, just Pick, Click, Give. Information online at pickclickgive.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Giving Coalition.
The nation's economic turmoil has officially hit Anchorage. Yesterday, the city's new mayor announced the budget that has a multi-million dollar shortfall. KSK's Len Anderson reports.
Acting Mayor Matt Klayman said yesterday's press conference simply confirmed existing suspicions.
None of us should be surprised by this news. The national media tells us that nearly every state and every city in our country is feeling the economic downturn.
What the new mayor could now officially pass along to the community was a fairly exact picture of the municipality's revenue status.
In the last 10 days since I became acting mayor, I've been meeting regularly with our senior staff to review the economic situation. Before discussing these challenges with the public, it was important to develop as complete a picture as possible. We are confident that we now have enough information to lay out the challenge as we see it to the public.
The administration currently estimates the budget shortfall at $17 million. But as Klayman explained, that total is a moving target, subject to the whims of an unpredictable national and international economy. The estimate combines the municipality's 2008 known revenue shortfall and 2009's predicted budget revenue shortfall. Last year, municipal revenues were almost $9 million below predictions. Right now, this year's revenue challenge is about $11.5 million. Like Klayman, Anchorage's chief fiscal officer, Sharon Weddleton, said not all the news was bad.
The vast bulk of the revenues in Anchorage are stable and don't fluctuate along with the economy. However, we do have some exposure to the economy in our revenue stream.
In Weddleton's depiction of the city's projected revenues, over $400 million fell into the stable category. It's this large stability factor that distinguishes Anchorage's economic situation from many cities across the nation. But about $50 million is labeled fluctuating. Weddleton said just to be conservative, the fluctuating portion is shown somewhat larger than it probably is. She then delved into the city's revenue weak spots.
We have three major areas of exposure. The first area of exposure should be no surprise to anyone, and that is that the state of the economy has materially affected our investment portfolio, both in 2008 and we anticipate in 2009.
The 2008 portfolio hit was just under $9 million. The 2009 estimate for below-budget revenue is about $7.5 million.
The second area of exposure is that some of our business activities that generate revenue to pay for municipal services have slumped recently. And then the final area of exposure is a new area of exposure for 2009, and that is we've become concerned that tourism activity could affect the municipality of Anchorage's hotel-motel bed tax.
Weddleton says the business activity shortfall of about $2 million is already being addressed, and that the bed tax situation might in part be covered by underestimates of possible federal revenues. That leaves $17 million in existing and estimated shortfall. With the challenge defined, Klayman says he's already begun the city's response.
In the last 24 hours, we have reached out to each member of the Assembly and to representatives of the eight employee unions to alert them and request their assistance. We have given all municipal departments a heads up that they will be needing to find cost savings. I'm asking each department to search for expense reductions that will cause as little pain as possible, both to employees and to the people who depend on municipal services.
Klayman declined to describe any actions now being considered to cope with the problem. He did note, however, that 75% to 80% of the city's operating budget is labor cost. This is Len Anderson.
Gene Keen, Homer's eagle lady, has died. Keen fed hundreds of bald eagles every winter from her home on the Homer Spit, drawing tourists and wildlife photographers from around the world. She died at home last night at the age of 85. KBBI's Casey Kelly has more.
In a 2007 interview that aired on the Alaska Public Radio Network's AK, Jean Keen talked about how she got started feeding eagles.
I don't like seeing anything go to waste, and I had some meat scraps or something, and there was probably a couple eagles sitting around. They just threw it out, and that's how it all started, with about two, and now I have about 175 to 200 birds that come.
That was in the late 1970s, a few years after Keen moved to Homer from the lower 48. She was born in 1923 and grew up on a dairy farm in Minnesota. As a young woman, she spent time on the rodeo circuit performing acrobatics on horses and traveling throughout much of the United States and Canada. Anchorage photographer Carrie Anderson is a friend of Keene's and author of the 2005 biography titled The Eagle Lady. He says Keene had a lifelong love of animals.
Gene is best known for feeding her eagles, but Gene also fed songbirds, and she was even known to care for a wayward moose that chanced upon her place one year. Gene has always loved animals, and in fact, when she's been in my home, we have a cat that's attracted to nobody and is extremely shy, and Gene was the only person that the cat ever warmed up to, and so Gene had a way with animals, and especially eagles.
Anderson, whose book includes hundreds of photos of the eagles that Keene fed, says it was quite the sight to see all of those birds. Andy says Keene, who got scraps of fish from the Icicle Seafoods plant where she worked, had to work overtime to bring food to the animals that she loved so much.
The number of fish that she doled out grew, as did the number of eagles. And over the course of a few decades, the number of eagles grew into the hundreds and grew into this just spectacular scenario there on the spit, one that's never going to be forgotten.
Still, Keene's eagle feeding came with a fair share of controversy. Environmentalists, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and others complained that she was doing more harm than good. Instead of relying on their natural instincts to survive, they said the eagles were becoming dependent on the fish that they received from Keene. And another problem developed. There were so many eagles that they started to become a nuisance. In 2006, the Homer City Council banned eagle feeding within city limits, with an exception for Keene that was supposed to last until 2010. But some in the Homer community don't want to see Keene's work come to an end.
This has become a strong part of the community, a well-known one of the things that stands out for Homer.
Steve Scarpita is a member of Homer's Economic Development Commission. He's been pushing a plan that would allow successors to keep feeding eagles on the spit after Keene passed away or could no longer feed the birds herself. Scarpita says the idea was to let Keene keep feeding the birds beyond 2010 and train others to do it when she couldn't. He says even though she's gone, he'd still like to see her work continue.
It would not only contribute to the economy of Homer, but it would be a lasting tribute to a woman who spent so much of her life doing what everyone else has now come to appreciate.
In the 2007 interview with AK, Keene openly wondered if she'd make it to 2010.
My age, I never know from year to year if my old bones are going to hold up to doing it to next year.
Keene died Tuesday night of natural causes at her trailer on the Homer Spit. In the past few months, she'd been receiving in-home care as her health deteriorated. It remains to be seen if the Homer City Council will authorize anyone to continue feeding eagles in her place. In Homer, I'm Casey Kelly.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Lynn Anderson in Anchorage, and Casey Kelly in Homer. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., Dave Donaldson from Juneau, and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. And I'm Duncan Moon. Have a good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment. On the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Didn't quite catch that report? Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at www.aprn.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.